Welcome back to the Port Game Day podcast. We are running with the same roster as last week. JT, again, unavailable, must have a calf injury. It is Friendly Andrew here leading the way. And joining me this evening, he is a shadowy figure from the Adelaide hip-hop scene. He's also the winner of KSC's Chicken Kicking for Chicken. It's Jim. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Good to be with you. Thanks a lot.
No worries. So the power kickoff this round, again, as Thursday night footy moves to Adelaide Oval. Both clubs are coming off games that ended with the scores out by a kick or less. Our opponents, the Hawthorn Hawks, just got over the Swans in Sydney, while Port arguably came out a couple of seconds short in a Chalidix and run-up in losing to the Cats at Cardinia last Thursday night. For a change, there are none. So both teams back up with the same 22. No doubt they're slightly hindered by the fact that their reserves would have played on the weekend and coming off a short break. Hawthorn are one of the 10 AFL sides that Port Adelaide have a winning record against. So we've got a lifetime record of 18-14 against the Hawks. The last time we met, Hawthorn got the biscuits. They had a third quarter burst again on a Thursday night at Adelaide Oval, and that ended up being the difference between the two teams. So we're back around again on a Thursday night, another week, another Friday potentially ruined. How are you seeing this one, Jimmy?
Yeah, well, I just hope it's not a close one like the couple of games we've had this year. You know, it's just a worry that we're not winning these close ones. We just have to start well. Again, we started well against the Hawks round 16 last year on a Thursday night, but we just weren't able to capitalise on those inside 50s. We dominated in that first quarter, let ourselves down. Again, it's just becoming a bit common these days, and we haven't seemed to be getting over those, heavily favoured inside 50 counts in our favour. Just not converting enough. And we saw again against Geelong when we had opportunities to kick clutch goals. That's another bugbear that we've been having to deal with, is just not converting goals. We saw last year, Matty Broadbent had a chance to kick a goal just at the half-time siren against the Hawks and wasn't able to convert. We saw opportunities similar to that against Geelong, and they're just hurting us too much, and I just feel like it's becoming a bit of a problem mentally, not getting over those close ones, but just not converting clutch goals in general.
Mm. Yeah, it certainly is feeling like a bit of an issue in these tight games. You look back on all of those opportunities that you had throughout the course of the game. Obviously, there were some obvious ones against Geelong that we weren't able to take advantage of, but we are racking up a little bit of a history, and it's interesting that I think the supporters have identified this for some time. But I saw an article for the first time this week that the mainstream media seem to have picked up on that as well in the Tizer, talking about our record in close games. So hopefully some acid starts getting poured on some of the players. Justin Westhoff, who just falter in key moments.
Mm. Yeah, he's not alone there, though. I mean, it's easy to single out him. He had some absolute Barry Crockers against Geelong, but you can just look through the history of the last few years. There's been plenty of opportunities to kick clutch goals, and we've just gone to water, and it's disappointing. Definitely Westhoff is a whipping boy these days, and he's definitely one of the most frustrating players for mine to watch. His ability to pull something out of his backside and create, miraculous goals is awesome, but he just can't kick the easy ones. So it's definitely something going on upstairs with him. But yeah, it's just the thing that frustrates me is we're dominating midfield this year. I mean, we should be dominating the Hawthorn midfield. It's just converting those opportunities, and once again, if we dominate the clearances, get those into our 50s, we have to convert. Now, the forward line is, operating okay. It's not fantastic, but it's all about the supply, so hopefully we get a good supply and convert.
Yeah, that's going to be critical, obviously, to the success of the team. Hawthorn have had an interesting season. It appeared to be the first of the real down years, but they've managed to scrape a few wins together, and they come into the game with a 4-6 win-loss record compared to our 5-5. And so there's a I guess it's a Rue 8-pointer this weekend to give us a chance to push away against them. Sort of maybe not in too much detail, but in generally, sort of what have you seen and thought and heard about the Hawks this year?
Well, like everyone else, I saw them get absolutely thrashed by Gold Coast. They've had some bad losses, but they've been able to regroup. They've got some new players coming through and lost a lot of talent. And you look at the team they bring over to Adelaide last year, a lot of talent comes out of that team. And then the players that have stayed, like the older blokes, are obviously another year older. So they're still relying on their older players, in particular Luke Hodge. Sean Burgoyne's been playing through the middle. He was asked to play there last week against Sydney. He's held up. He was absolutely fantastic against the Swans. But now, being, you know, 35, it's a tough ask for him to back it up 2 weeks in a row and play predominantly midfield. So their midfield depth is probably their weakness. And having to rely on, you know, some of the older blokes to run through there week in, week out, you can, you know, hope for a Port sake that they, you know, start slowing down a bit and, you know, we can crash in and hurt them early.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was having a dig around in some of the stats just to see what they could tell us about Hawthorn. And what I found interesting is that their contested possession and clearance differentials have always been poor. They've always been negative compared to the opposition, even going back to 2015. That's been a consistent trend. So it's almost been regardless of the cattle that they've got in the midfield, it's always been pretty similar. One thing that did drop away, and whilst their disposal efficiency hasn't, they're still number one in disposal efficiency across the AFL this season at 75%. But what has dropped away dramatically is their marks inside 50. So in 2015, which was, what was that, the last of their premiership
year.
Yeah. And what was that? Was that back-to-back?
Yes, they were going for three in a row in 2016.
So 15, they were the top AFL team for average marks inside 50. So obviously getting the ball in there, marks inside 50 generally indicate you can have a shot on goal pretty easily. They're down to 17th in 2017, so that's a dramatic drop-off in the space of 2 years. And I think what that reflects is whilst the disposal efficiency is high, that maybe the penetration that they're getting and the overall sort of game style has started to come off a little bit throughout the course of that. I think they dropped down to about middle of the pack last year and a way down. So there's some signs there that match up. Well, there's some stats there that match up well against what we like to do. We do well on the contested possessions, the clearances, and all those sorts of things, as you pointed out, Jim. But it'll be around getting that real forward half time for us, pressing the Hawks in and making it really hard to get it up the field, because even when they do get it up the field, they're not clunking it in the forward lines anymore. So
yeah, the thing that I was watching and noticed before, sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're right.
You're talking about marks inside 50. Last year they were jumping all over us round 16, particular Cyril Rioli, I think Popopolo. I think Popopolo had a bit of a hangout over Broadbent. Broadbent was a bit of a stepladder last year, unfortunately for him. Luke Bruce, I said, taking hangers. You know, they had Gunston running through there on the lead. They had a difference looking forward line to what they're bringing over for the Thursday night clash. So but it's interesting who they're relying on this year to convert and kick goals. Different sort of team when you take out Rioli. Bruce is obviously playing a bit more midfield, and then Gunston's floating around a bit, playing, I think, 30% forward this year. So it's a different looking forward line, and they're, you know, bringing Ty Vickery. So who's going to take those marks and convert? Anyone, it's anyone's guess.
Yeah, I was just digging that up now just to see if I could find the stats for this season for them and who they're actually getting their score from. Can't find that quickly, so I'll ignore that. But it's a good time to start talking about the forward line, because that's normally who kicks the goals. So they've got sort of the, I guess you'd say, two tall forwards in Roughhead and Vickery. They're the guy. They're the two sort of taller options. A third tall in Jack Gunston, who's been pushing up the wing quite a bit this year, from what I can gather. Rioli is obviously missing from the team, so he won't be running around the forward line causing havoc. But Paul Poppolo, we'll just call him Poppy from here on out, Jim. He's going around as well in the forward lines. And then they've just got a random assortment of players that I've never heard of that'll move through there. So what do you think in terms of matchups? Where are you heading with that?
Look, Roughhead's their number one key. I guess we've seen Tommy Cleary do, you know, pretty well, arguably beat Hawkins last week. So he's a potential matchup for him, with Jack Homsch as well, who can sort of run with him as well.
Yeah.
But then I guess Vickery's the other one you got to look at. So, yeah, we'll see our three bigs sort of rotate through the different tools they throw at us. Yeah, it's. I feel like we're definitely got the advantage there, as we saw last week when we were, you know, we weren't getting caught out in those one-on-ones, getting exposed. It was sort of, you know, a bit of luck, a couple of free kicks. There was some goals there that shouldn't have been allowed just by, you know, general football defence. But, yeah, we saw a few easy ones, and unfortunately. But, yeah, that wasn't a lot of those bigger types that I mentioned's fault. So you can sort of sleep well knowing they did their job, and hopefully they do the job against Hawthorn.
Yeah, I mean, dirty little secret, I actually missed three quarters of the Geelong game, and I haven't been motivated enough to watch the first three quarters, but I caught the last quarter, and yeah, it seemed like the goals were being kicked through transition and movement, as opposed to Hawkins dining out at the top of the goal square. So yeah, I agree that Cleary seems to be the man for Roughhead. He's got the mobility, but also the strength to deal with him. I reckon Jonas will go to Vickery. He tends to take that sort of taller ruckman type, particularly someone like Vickery, who doesn't really appreciate a lot of body contact. I think that's Jonas's sort of game. He'll put the body into him and work him off it. And so that means, I reckon, Homsch potentially goes with Gunston. He can sort of try and keep with him on the lead, but also if Gunston works up the ground, Homsch is liable to sort of move back off him and chop off the kick that Gunston might get. So I think we've absolutely got the players to match them, and I think that'll be a key stat to monitor during the games, is if they are starting to mark the ball inside 50, we could be in a fair bit of strife. In terms of the Smalls, Poppy's really the standout, and I think Darcy Byrne-Jones will probably get the gig on him.
He hasn't had a fantastic year though, Poppy. Just looking at a couple of the games, you know, when they've been thrashed, he's been unsighted just about, averaging around, you know, the 65 to 70 mark for Dream Team. So it's not a fantastic start to his year. I think Broadbent took him last year from memory. But yeah, I reckon Darcy needs to really bounce back from his game last week. Let himself down a couple of times. So if he gets the job, I'll back him in to bounce back after a pretty average game.
Yeah, it's interesting the commentary around Darcy Byrne-Jones. Certainly on our favourite internet forum, Big Footy, there's been people pretty critical of his performance. But I think that comes just from the heights that he hit when he came into the team, and he almost didn't put a foot wrong. He was really so clean with his disposal, and he's just been making a couple of blues every game, and I think that's sort of tarnished people's perception of him. But he's still quite clearly a first 22 player for me. I'd keep him going around. So yeah, so that's the forward 50 for the Hawks. Back the other way with our forward line. Obviously, the man who copped some heat during the week, 32nd Charlie. How looking at the Hawthorn backline, I mean, they don't really have a real matchup for him. I say that, and it's just occurred to me, did I miss? No, Frawley's not playing, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of down to Josh Gibson and potentially not just another one off the West Adelaide Football Factory, Caden Brand. he might. So it'll be between the two of them to take him, I would imagine. I'm sort of assuming that Caden Brown will get the job, and then Josh Gibson will spend the entire game coming off whoever he's on and trying to spoil and be third man up. That tends to be the way he likes to operate.
Yeah, I mean, Caden Brown's only played 16 games AFL footy, so if he gets the job on Dixon, he's going to have a night with a lot of worries. But you're right, they're going to rely on the third man up, as they've done in their history. You know, with the Gibson and Hodge, they've got a lot of experience back there. But they also have a bit of an inexperience stuff as well. So it's interesting. They like to think their defence is better than our forward line, reading a few comments. But, yeah, good luck to young Brand taking on the colossal 32nd Dicko. But yeah.
I think if we can, I think it just comes down to how we bring the ball in. If we can get it in front of Charlie's eyes, no one stands a chance. But if we start punting it on top of his head, we could be in strife. But I mean, that leaves potentially Jackson Trengove as a path to goal. Obviously missed a goal late in the piece against Geelong, or midway through that last quarter. But if Gibson is potentially the natural matchup for him, unless they run like a Ryan Burton on him. It's important that Jacko doesn't go to Dixon's space and actually presents another option, because he should be outsizing the vast majority of whoever he's left up against, unless big boy Ben McAvoy starts trying to fill the hole. But there's an opportunity, and this is really where it starts to cry out. I mean, the Jackson Trengo Ford experience has been a little bit mixed. Yeah, I still think he's a great contributor to the team and the culture of the team. But I think the jury's starting to. I don't think they've come with their decision, but I think they're starting to get a bit restless.
Yeah, well, he played a lot more ruck last week. Definitely. I mean, we saw him in the ruck and rider up forward. He played. That was probably the most he's played in ruck all year, apart from the game that Ryder missed, obviously. But
yeah.
Yeah, it would have been just nice for him to kick that goal and whatnot, but
yeah.
You've got, you know, Westhoff as well, who's arguably a tall forward. he should be kicking goals, so, I mean, you can't blame him, Jacko. He's first year in that role, and Westhoff's played 10 years.
Yeah, I think the argument of whether Justin Westhoff is a key forward is dead and buried. He is not. He is not playing the role, nor does he convert as a key forward should. And I'm sort of done with him, to be honest. I think he's the sort of player that he's unlikely to play in a grand final team for Port Adelaide or a premiership side even. And so I'm happy to transition Justin out ASAP, to be quite honest. And it doesn't sound like I'm on my Pat Malone in that regard. But in terms of this specific game, I can see them letting Justin sort of run free-ish and hodgle a zone off him and try and chop it up and do damage going back the other way.
Yeah, I mean, now or never for Justin, unfortunately. Like, if we lose to Hawthorn, he doesn't perform again. I just don't know how Ken can keep picking blokes that don't perform, and you know, there's good depth in the SANFL coming through. It's about time we started seeing some of those players. If the team doesn't perform, and this is one of those games, it could potentially be season defining. I mean, if Hawthorn win, their season's really back on track, and we lose, suddenly it's going to be real worrying. And players like Justin have to bounce back after disappointing games, and he just hasn't been consistent enough for his whole career. And after bad games, we've usually seen him perform okay. But yeah, it's interesting how he perform. We'll see how he performs tomorrow night.
And in terms of the smaller fleet in the forward lines, I think Robbie Gray's really the only one that we should be talking about, because the other lot haven't fired a shot recently. And I think Taylor DeRay is probably the... Is it Taylor? I feel like that's right. Yep. He's probably the only... He's the one that will go with Robbie Gray. He tends to be their shutdown small. small defender, and it will be whilst there hasn't been a lot of news, it'll be interesting to see whether the umpires decide to blow the whistle a couple of times if the ball goes in and Robbie's being held.
There's a lot of dodgy decisions against Hawthorn last year that got the crowd involved. So, yeah, just another game that we seem to get a few ones not go our way, but it's been well documented this week about some of the decisions that weren't paid, and they were the ones that really hurt us against Geelong. And hopefully we get the better deal. I mean, he's had taller players on him in the past this year, Art Ford. So if there was to be a taller player, what sort of matchup, who could you see going to him?
I mean, last week, Buse played on him, who wasn't a toll. So I think that's I don't think we're sort of in the midst of a trend. I'm not sure. They don't really have anyone because they've barely got two key defenders to begin with. I mean, Ryan Burton's a bit taller, but I don't know whether he's a sort of shutdown defender. I think he's obviously started his career as a forward and he's sort of learning how to play in the back half, but isn't necessarily a shutdown defender. They've got Blake Hardwick. I think he's a midfielder. James Sicily is obviously a half forward. James Cousins is a mid. Brennan Whitecross is sort of a flanker. So they don't really have. I mean, unless they do something like grab Ricky Henderson out of the midfield and whack him down on it, but I'd back Robbie Gray's football smarts in against Ricky Henderson any day of the week. So. Yeah, I don't reckon they've got an option to go toll against him unless they put Josh Gibson on him, and then we should really be looking at Dixon and Trengove and just kicking them the entire time because they should just be swamping everyone else.
Yeah, nah, you're right. I think there is a lot of inexperienced backmen for the Hawks when you consider the games played, but then, you know, their running backs, I think they'll be relying on Burgoyne again, and I guess Burton does provide a bit of drive off there as well, which means Youngie and Impey have to provide that forward line pressure and really hold the ball down there.
Indeed.
Which would be important for sure.
So moving now into the midfield and the ruck contest, Paddy Ryder continues to impress, and I think he's starting to get the media attention that his season has richly deserved. He comes up against big boy Ben McAvoy, BT's boy, who's on similar numbers in terms of hit-outs during the year, but it doesn't seem to be translating, as we said, into the Hawks' midfield really doing anything because they continue to lose the contested and clearance battle, and it's really been the case for the last couple of years. So he battles manfully but doesn't really do a huge amount with his hit-outs. But... it could be a little bit sort of around the ground. He's a relatively strong field mark. He's a big man, and whether he sort of plonks himself in the Port forward 50 and provides a sort of another defensive line could be potentially where he goes. But if he does that, then it's important that Ryder makes him pay either as a link man or potentially floating forward and jumping on his head.
Yeah, I guess Ryder's hasn't been fantastic, which has been talked about around the ground, I guess, with some of his marking and link-up play. His ruck work's obviously been all-Australian type standard. If he can put together another 15 or so games like he's put together so far this year, he'll be in contention for sure. But McAvoy's getting a bit on. I feel like Ryder's got the jumping prowess. Yep. But he just really needs to stick to him if he does float forward. So that'll be important. He doesn't get off the leash and get some cheapies inside 50.
Yeah, as I said, he's got that marking ability, whether it's defensively marking in the back lines or pushing forward to be a goal-kicking option as well. In terms of their actual midfield, obviously Tom Mitchell had a huge game a couple of weeks back in a loss against Collingwood, racking up 50 possessions. But I've got to say, I'm with Nathan, hashtag with Nathan. Tom doesn't really seem to really give you that much hurt. He gets clearances, but again, they don't really seem to hurt teams significantly. So I mean, he's one to watch. He's got a bit of the Gary Ablett's about him, where he'll get the ball, little hand pass, and get the 1-2s to sort of pump up the fantasy points for his owners. But there's a typical Hawks midfield. I mean, they don't really have the big names. I mean, Mitchell wasn't even playing midfield when he left. Lewis has obviously moved on as well. So they do it. They do it, I think, through weight of numbers and system more than outright talent these days.
Yeah, I think they'll be looking to change it up a bit. Maybe see Ruffhead run through there a bit. Burgoyne, like I mentioned earlier. Luke Bruce, I don't really rate him as a midfielder, but they might try and get him going. But yeah, it doesn't scream out, premiership type midfield when they lose players that absolutely dominated for 10 years. So it's a work in progress. We've definitely got enough young talent and older heads in there to really take it up to them. And if Wright is getting first opportunity, we expect the likes of, Ollie Wines to continue his great form. Brad Ebert playing his 200th. He knocked himself out last year when we played the Hawks, and one of the few games he hasn't played, well, he technically played, but missed due to a concussion. 200 games, fantastic. How do you rate his career as far as Port Adelaide football midfielders go?
Yeah, Ebo, I mean, it's 200 games that's really flown by. I mean, did he play 100 games with the Eagles, or was he just on the sort of 80 or 90 games mark with them? Can't remember anyway.
5 years, I think he spent there, didn't he?
Yeah, so he's been with us since 2012. He's been a pretty solid contributor over the journey, but I think he's really come into his own now. His season this year has been exceptional. He's really sort of found his niche. I think, what is he, 27 or 28? He's put a lot of games into that, and so if he can play another 5 years of this standard or there or thereabouts. A 300 game Ebert, plenty of those with Port Adelaide would be sensational. So I just hope he can keep his form up for the rest of the season, because he'll be pushing for a best and fairest, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's one of those type of players that leads by example on the training track. He's obviously played a lot of games, which means he's kept his body in tip-top shape throughout his career. Very diligent with his recovery, I'd imagine. Just sets the right example, which is why we saw him in our leadership group, 2-3 years into his career at Port Adelaide. Having a kid, maybe getting married, maturing a bit, could be a reason why he started to play some career best footy this year, relinquishing that vice captaincy perhaps as well, just letting him concentrate on his footy. Another reason why he's going well, but I think he's just got some support around him now. He's got a defined role and, like I said, some bigger bodies around him to take some of that brunt off the opposition coming straight at him. So it's important that Sam Powell-Pepper's come in and Ollie Wines, and they've been able to form a bit of a combination. But last week, again, I was pretty critical. I think we saw Boat come into the game for a quarter, but other than that, another one that disappointed me. Speak about him perhaps. And then Robbie Gray as well. He played a bit more time in the midfield. I was watching some highlights last year against Hawthorn, and he was absolutely in flying form early in the game, creating those opportunities by weaving in, weaving out, putting the ball out for other midfielders to run onto. With Wingard out, again, I was hoping to see a bit more Robbie Gray, but seemed pretty set on playing him forward. It's just a shame that Wingard's injured, but
yeah, I think Gray's, whilst he might not be injured, I think a limited preseason's really put him behind the eight ball in terms of midfield minutes this year. The wing guard thing still is frustrating, and I think it sounds like he'll be back next week. So we'll just have to bide our time for that. I mean, who do you think? Just going back to Ebert. He'll play inside. I mean, who do you think, if anyone, I mean, do we run someone like him up against the Tom Mitchell as sort of a matchup as opposed to a tag and just let him do his thing?
I mean, I can't remember who we played against him, Mitchell Lart, when we played Sydney. Maybe Ollie Wines, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Mitchell probably, he probably hasn't copped and doesn't seem to be copping because he keeps racking the ball up. Cops are tagged that much, but maybe we just go head to head and we don't worry about that. I mean, on the outside, though, one player that I just wanted to mention, he's actually a bit of an AFL favourite of mine, or non-Port favourite, is Isaac Smith. He's a seriously high-quality outside midfielder. He's cut us up in the past. I reckon he's a great finisher on the run. So he's one to watch out for. That's a task for Polek and Amon and maybe even Boak, who's playing a bit more outside this year than he ever probably has, to really keep an eye on him and just try and keep him at sort of one possession chipping. If he runs with the ball, that's when I reckon Hawthorn really start to look quite dangerous. So he'd be a player that I'd be closely watching.
Yeah, like Shills as well. I didn't realise he played 150 games. Another midfielder that I don't mind, actually, for the Hawkers. He's had a pretty good season, averaging around 90 dream team. So you take that.
He's the sort of player that Hawthorn has when they're winning premierships. I mean, he's just that classic sort of second string midfielder, like just a good solid team footballer, hard at it, uses the ball pretty well, who's probably now not getting found out, that's the wrong way, but he's probably no more than that, and it's hard for him to go up sort of against the highest of high midfielders, but he's the sort of player that if you could pick up and run with for 2 or 3 years. I mean, he really does look after that second string type midfield role really well.
He's definitely trending in the right direction. Last three games, he's been over 100. Last week, 133, so 31 touches, 18 kicks.
Yeah.
So 10 tackles, 5 clearances. So, yeah.
Good little player.
Not bad.
Mm.
So, I mean, Bruce is another one. He can get off the chain. What do you think about him?
I don't know. Is it just because they're not been as good recently that I just don't? I feel like Puopolo and Bruce to a lesser degree. I mean, they were kicking sort of significant scores through the 13 to 15 period probably, but they've sort of come off a bit. He used to be a bit of a dead eye dick, and I think they've had to, because they've lost talent up the field. They've had to shift someone like him up. And I certainly prefer to see him running around the midfield than I do in the forward 50, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely, I'd take him in the midfield rather than the forward role he's played in the past, where he was just about, perfect kicking and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, should we wrap things up and let people get on with their, lunch breaks, breakfast, whatever, however you are consuming the drive safely, keep your eyes on the road if you are listening to this in the car. So some six pointers as we always do. James, I'll read them out, you will provide an answer, I'll then provide an answer, and we will not keep track of how this result goes. So leading goal kicker in the game for Port Adelaide,
30 second Dicko bouncing back this week. He'll definitely kick under 30 seconds, and I think he'll kick 3 to 4 goals.
I've never wanted Charlie to last shorter than 30 seconds more in my entire life. I am going to go, Charlie's he's a great bet. I'm going to go Robbie Gray. I reckon the umpires are going to feel as much sympathy as they ever have for Robert Gray, and he'll kick a bag. Leading player by Supercoach points.
I'll take Brad Ebert in his 200th.
Nice. Maybe he could get 200 points. I think that's a good score in AFL fantasy. I'm going to get Ollie Wines. I like to pick him every week because I like Ollie. All right. This next award is called the Silk Splinter Award. It's a dual award. One, Silk, Sean Burgoyne, Hawthorn and Port Adelaide legend. Splinter, Stephen Gillam, also Hawthorn and Port Adelaide legend. This week's Silk Splinter is Brad Ebert. He averages 7.5 tackles per game. That's where I'm setting the under and over. How many tackles will Brad lay this week?
I reckon he'll come out breathing and lay 10.
So you're taking the over?
Yeah.
I'll take the under because that's what the crowd wants to hear. The crowd. Thursday night, school night. We aren't quite in school holidays. Mm. It's going to be swear word cold down there tomorrow night. It's freezing already. It was. I was there for a function this morning. It was bloody cold. Rug up or take your beer jacket. What sort of crowd do you think we're going to get?
I'll take 50,000.
Oh.
I think they sold. All right. Well, they've sold 49,000 tickets. So.
Have they? Yeah. Oh, whether you there you go. I'm going to go. I didn't realise that's some high level research, James. I am going to go with 41,000. I reckon there'll be some stairways and the like. What do they say? The country fans will struggle, and the kids on a school night, and excuses. But I'll be there. Will you be there?
I won't be there.
Oh wow!
First game I've missed this year.
I'll let John Olsen know that his takings will be down. The winner and margin. What are you? Are you going to go?
God, Struth. Yeah. The bookies say Port are raging favourites.
Yep.
I'll take Port by 21 points.
Interesting. This week's margin and tip for me, I'm going to go by the website called The Squiggle. You may have heard of it. It is a graphical representation of how close a team is to attack and defence for an AFL premiership. It rates us quite highly. At the moment, we are about the third favourite to win the flag based on how we've performed. It forecasts us to finish third this year, 14 wins, 8 losses from here. So it's telling me all these things that I like. So I'm going to go with that as well. Its tip has Port Adelaide winning by 41 points. So I'm going to round that up and say I reckon Port will win by 7 goals. I think we're genuinely a better team based on who we've performed against over the season. So there's no reason why we shouldn't go out and flog these Hawthorn players.
So if we lose, will you be relying on that for future tipping, and what will it suggest we finish?
It'll be interesting. Well, I'm happy to give a Squiggle update. I'm sure the man who runs Squiggle would be happy for people to talk about it. But it's a model that is refined. Max Barry is his name.
Is that the one where they've done a thousand different simulations or?
I'm sure there's lots of things on this website. Live.squiggle.com.au if you're playing at home. It's fascinating. It's got lots of little predictors. You can do the one I like playing with is this sliding doors thing, which says on average how much of a team's final score is due to luck. And you can play around with luck and skill and see where that places teams. And so it's all based on statistical modelling and probabilities and all of this sort of good stuff that the AFL is sort of starting to get involved. The AFL fans at least are starting to get involved. Obviously, we've been fans of the NBA and the advanced metrics and all that sort of stuff have been there for a while. And so AFL's slowly starting to develop there. There's some great stuff on Twitter.
So does it back it up? The Geelong loss was 100% bad luck for Port and 100% luck for Geelong?
No. From memory, I think it was saying that it was predicting us to win by 3 points. So it was actually quite close. This week it has Geelong versus Adelaide, 99-98. So a very, very, that's basically saying, yeah, that's an incredibly close game. So it'll be fascinating to see. I've played around with the website before, but haven't actually sort of screenshotted the results and gone, yeah, this is exactly what it predicted. But yeah.
Well, you heard it here first, Port fans. Port Adelaide for top four. Get on it. Go to the...
Absolutely.
You bet.
The Squiggle.
Get on it.
Indeed, indeed. I don't. Are they our gambling sponsor? I'm not sure. Very good. All right. Well, that's enough. Whatever we want to call this at the end of the podcast. James, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend a Wednesday night with you. I'm looking forward to going back to normal, although I think I might miss. I think I might be off the podcast next week. So hopefully, JT has freed himself from whatever grind he is in over the last couple of weeks, and he will he'll be hopefully back on deck. And we are actually taking in the Essendon game live next week. So if you recognise my voice as I'm lining up for a beer at Etihad or wherever we're playing the Dons, feel free to introduce yourself. Yeah, that's enough.
Good stuff.
Come on, pal.
Go to the ports.